This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
So these are symbolic first moves and acknowledging that biomass is not a genuine clean renewable, but for real on-the-ground changes to be made, there's still a long way to go.
In recent years, Americans have suddenly begun paying attention to what Korea has to offer culturally. From K-pop to television dramas to mouth-watering Korean barbecue. But how many people know about Korea's climate innovations and policy? This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to Hansae Song, who works with the South Korean-based nonprofit For Our Climate. We get a summary of Korea's involvement in fighting climate change, look at the country's energy grid, and discuss South Korea's recent decision to stop subsidies for biomass fuel. Then we dig into the archives to learn a little bit more about biomass, also known as wood pellets, from Manga Bay contributor Justin Catanoso. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Hansae Song. He is the Forest and Land Use Lead for Solutions for Our Climate. Hansae, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex. Great to be here.
So first, why don't you tell our listeners what Solutions for Our Climate is all about?
So Solutions for Our Climate is a climate advocacy nonprofit organization based out of Korea. So we do research, advocacy, also campaigns and other coalition building work in Korea and also across the Asia region. So our goal is to make sure that our government and corporate actions are in line with proposed climate targets and strategies that we have, basically bringing down greenhouse gas emissions across the continent.
Maybe you can give us a snapshot of the climate change movement on the whole in South Korea. How does it differ from the U.S. and how much of it is government fueled versus grassroots, if you can kind of estimate?
Yeah, first, I think I can say that climate change is a really big issue among the Korean public, and we have a very high... the climate movement has grown a lot in recent years in Korea, and it's not just the usual environmental campaigners and advocates, but also people from across the sectors like experts, scientists, artists, and local campaigners all across the country. And the general public, the awareness of climate change is very high. And if you look at recent polls in Korea, an overwhelming percentage of people demand for stronger and better climate action from both the government and corporations. So I must say that what's different from the U.S. is that in Korea, there's no climate denial. There's no people saying that climate change is not real or is not caused by humans. Everybody's on the same page that it's man-made and it's a crisis that we have to work together. But of course, when it comes to specifics, people have a slightly different opinions when it comes to what kind of strategies or technologies that we should employ. But we are, I think, all on the same page that we have to bring down greenhouse gas emissions as quickly as possible to avert the worst climate scenarios.
And I want to discuss some of those solutions that are being discussed in South Korea in a second. But what are some of the most striking ways that South Korea has been affected by climate change? Here in California, for example, we have wildfires and then you have extreme temperatures in Phoenix, et cetera. What kind of problems has Korea encountered with a warming planet?
I think it's more or less the similar things that we are seeing in the U.S. Wildfires, especially this year, this summer, we had the record breaking wildfires all over region, Southeast region in South Korea, that basically burned an area that's equivalent to the size of Seoul. So that was the biggest wildfires we have yet to see. And that definitely alarmed a lot of bells to a lot of people, because before, fires in Korea are more or less kind of restricted to a certain parts of the country. But now we're seeing these huge mega fires like right behind our houses or right behind apartments and like right behind our cities. So I think that's one of the things that people started to notice more often and in more severity as well. I'd also like to mention that the extreme weather events like heat waves are also getting worse every year, and we now jokingly but also sadly said this is the coolest summer you'll ever get to see. And every summer is getting hotter and hotter, and especially when we used to have this more moderate temperate climate, now our climate has turned into subtropical and even, you know, getting closer and closer to tropical. So we're seeing a lot of not only changes in temperatures, weathers, but also the crops that we grow and the products that we get from the fields and the farms are getting different as are changing as well. Also, the fisheries are heavily impacted, and we're not getting the same kind of fish that we used to get anymore.
And as a forest expert for solutions for our climate, you're one of the best people to talk to about Korea's embracing of biomass fuel. A lot of European countries have been using it for many years now, and it's a big problem in terms of its emissions. The EU designated, for some head-scratching reason, they designated wood pellets as a green solution, a very clean solution, which it is not. Give us a brief overview and history of how wood pellet use has been fueling a lot of the electric grid in South Korea, and then we'll talk about how they're moving away from it.
Yes, that's an excellent question. So as you said, biomass energy, I think generally speaking, is simply as burning wood to produce heat and electricity. And in South Korea, biomass is usually used to make electricity on a utility scale. So we're talking about this hundreds of megawatts of big power plants pouring wood pellets and chips to make electricity. And that has become the second largest source of what is called renewable energy in the country. And of course, that is an issue. And it's considered renewable, not just in South Korea, but also elsewhere across the world, because the governments and industries assume that the plants they burn can grow back and potentially reabsorbing the carbon released when burned. But of course, that assumption doesn't really hold up in reality. So when you burn wood, it's a common sense that, you know, it emits a lot of carbon, because wood is basically made of carbon and water. So when you burn wood, it emits carbon. And because wood is such an inefficient source of fuel, it actually emits more carbon dioxide than coal, gas, or oil than per unit of energy produced. It's just because when you think about how our history evolved from burning wood in the prehistoric times and moving on to coal, oil, and most recently gas, people moved on. We moved on from less efficient sources of energy to a more efficient ones. And now we're trying to go back to wood, and that just not add up. That just is not the right way to go, especially when you think about the amount of energy that we consume every day now, which is a lot more than, you know, in the prehistoric times.
And if you consider that these sources of energy are also heat sinks for carbon, right? We're cutting down trees, and then when we burn them, they're not only emitting greenhouse gases, we're also eliminating the ability to suck up a lot of those gases by cutting down trees.
Yeah, so the industry claim is that, oh, we're going to plant new trees where we have felled the old ones, and the new trees will grow back and absorb the carbon again. Therefore, burning wood, aka biomass, is carbon neutral. That's their logic. That's actually, if they do replant the trees, that could be technically true in theory, but trees don't grow overnight. It takes decades and sometimes over a century to grow. And if you're cutting down a 100-year-old tree to burn in a power plant, then replant the same tree again. And even if that tree does grow back intact, despite all the heat waves and the climate crisis that we're experiencing, it takes 100 years to recover the carbon that was released in the atmosphere. So when we have to go carbon neutral by 2050, biomass is not the way to go, and it just worsens the climate crisis in the meantime.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Hansei Song. He is the forests and land use lead for Solutions for Our Climate. So, Hansei, we were talking about wood pellet use and biomass energy. There's been a shift in policy from the South Korean government and from private industry there. South Korea has announced plans to move away from biomass energy. Maybe you can explain what motivated this and how you see it unfolding down the road.
Yes, absolutely. So over time, it became pretty clear that subsidizing biomass wasn't helping us meeting our climate goals. And there was a lot of environmental groups, academics, and even some parts of the private sector pointing out that we were spending massive amounts of electricity consumers' money, amounting to about $700 every year on this fuel that's a fake solution. So before how it all happened, I think we need to talk about how the subsidy system actually worked for biomass in South Korea. This was because the government had set up this renewable energy portfolio, including biomass as a type of renewables, and basically gave biomass renewable energy credits at a rate that's higher than solar or onshore wind. So the power producers basically turned to biomass instead of building new windmills or solar panels to meet their energy renewable energy targets, simply because biomass is more heavily subsidized and they could make more money out of it.
Were these wood pellets being produced in South Korea, or were they solely being imported from, let's say, Southeast Asia?
Yeah, so of all the wood pellets that we use, 80% is imported from other countries, mostly in Southeast Asia, like in Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, and some from other countries like Canada and Russia. So this is another dimension of the problems that we're seeing here. We're basically plundering this very biodiverse and very critical rainforest in South Asia to meet our own energy needs through burning them in our power plants. And biomass didn't really have to be there in the first place because we have other cheaper renewable options. So this is not only just inefficient, this is an act of climate injustice as I see it, because we, the people who are burning this wood, is not actually bearing the cost of carbon emissions, because all the emissions from the power plants were not seen in the ledgers, our inventories in South Korea. They were all embedded in the land use sector in the producer countries. So we're taking this wood away, this precious forest away from the countries in Southeast Asia, and basically making them pay for the emissions as well. So this is how we see this is it's really problematic when it comes to justice as well.
And you mentioned how the subsidies were more generous for biomass than they were for solar and wind. How did that occur?
So how this renewable subsidy program in Korea works is pretty simple. The subsidies are decided on the cost of electricity, the cost of renewable energy. So in South Korea, renewable energy is still mostly more expensive than fossil fuels, unfortunately. So it needs subsidies, which is fine. So solar needs subsidies, wind needs subsidies, and also biomass needs subsidies. And ironically, burning wood is actually the most costly, it's the costliest way of making electricity because wood is not a cheap fuel. Wood is actually very expensive. It's more expensive than coal or any kind of fossil fuels. And you have to constantly buy wood, which is only getting more expensive because it's getting more valuable, more precious. And so in turn, the industry asks for more subsidies and the government, thinking that biomass is renewable and carbon neutral, just agreed to grant biomass subsidies that are higher than solar or wind, ironically, because those are more affordable.
And so which organizations, people, do you give the credit to for accelerating this change where South Korea is now moving away from their investment in biomass?
I think it's the combination of all the work, the Korean civil society, and also the general awareness among the policymakers and public that contributed to this change. Until very recently, even though the key decision makers in government, especially in the energy ministry, knew that biomass is not the right answer, that biomass is expensive, is emissive, is environmentally destructive, but they didn't really make a public statement or acknowledgement that biomass is not the right way to go. But with this policy change, they actually acknowledged all the points that we have been raising to the government and to the industry, all these issues, and they listed those issues in this policy reform. And because of these reasons, now we're finally acknowledging that biomass is more harmful than it is beneficial to the climate and to our economy overall. So I guess it's all the work that the campaigners and scientists have done so far, and also a lot of stories that our partners like Indonesia or other countries bringing back to South Korea and telling us that the energy subsidies that the South Korean gives out to biomass is hurting our forests, it's damaging our ecosystems.
So I saw that Japan is also moving away from biomass energy right around the same time as South Korea. Is this just coincidence or did one country influence the other, Hansei?
I don't think those two governments coordinated with each other when it comes to making their energy policy decisions. But what I think is that the Japanese government saw what South Korean government was doing, and because there are also a lot of campaigns in Japan demanding a shift away from biomass. And I think those demands and asks probably reached a point where the Japanese government also had to listen to some extent. And it's also a global, I think, what we're beginning to see is the global shift in biomass policy overall, because it's not just South Korea, but also the UK, which has the world's largest biomass power plant currently running. And recently, the UK government also decided to halve the subsidies for that power plant as well. So I think it's the cumulative effect of all the work that people around the world have been doing to highlight the deforestation and carbon emissions issues with biomass and demanding changes in policy. But I would also like to point out that these are really good, positive first steps when it comes to move away from biomass, but it does not nearly go far enough. For example, even with these changes with our subsidy program in Korea, the existing power plants can still receive subsidies like up to 20 years down the road, and that's just simply unacceptable, especially when we have to phase out coal as soon as possible. And also Japan, the subsidies are affecting only the new power plants that could be in plan, but there really haven't been that many new power plants being built in Japan either. So these are symbolic first moves and acknowledging that biomass is not a genuine clean renewable, but for real on-the-ground changes to be made, there's still a long way to go.
So looking at a breakdown of Korea's energy grid, this is a small percentage, relatively still, of Korea's grid. In 2023, 24% of the total energy supply was coal, 37% was oil, another 18% was natural gas, and 17% was nuclear. So how are policymakers in Korea hoping that that gets transformed? Where are the immediate cuts going to be? One would hope coal and biomass would be the low-hanging fruit there to be reduced.
So biomass is only a part of the issues, the energy and electricity issues that Korea has. And we have, as you said, we are still very heavily dependent on fossil fuels like coal and gas. And nuclear is a whole other story, whether that's a way to go or not. There's a division even within the environmental movement. But I think everybody, and especially politicians, agree that we need more renewables in general. And then, of course, solar and wind are definitely the first two areas that we still need to ramp up pretty quickly, because there's still a lot of untapped solar and wind potential in Korea. Korea is surrounded by seas on the three sides, and we're not harnessing this massive offshore wind potential that we have. So a lot of the investments and large-scale projects are currently being planned to build more windmills offshore. So that's what we are probably seeing in the next couple of years.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Han Se-song. He is the forests and land use lead for Solutions for Our Climate. So, Han Se, you've been living in Alaska for quite a long time. Why don't you explain what brought you to Fairbanks, Alaska, and share with us your personal journey of going from Korea to Alaska, which is a state that most Americans have never visited.
I came to Alaska 10 years ago, basically to study wildlife. And I did my bachelor's here in wildlife biology. I had always just dreamed of coming here and then, you know, living out in nature. That was my dream growing up. So that was the reason I came here. And I went back to Korea for a few years and then started working with SFOC. But now I'm married to my wife, who's from Alaska, so I'm here mainly because of my family, not because of work. But I'm also seeing a lot of interesting differences between Korea and Alaska when it comes to conversations about climate and environment.
Not a lot of climate-denying, gun-toting, truck-driving people in Seoul, I imagine.
Yeah. I think it mostly comes down to differences between, metropolis and very sparsely populated state, and also very heavily oil and gas dependent state.
And 40 years of disinformation from right-wing media.
Yeah, I don't still really know in depth when it comes to how the like climate politics and discourse in the U.S. works. I'm often very baffled by how everything is so different from the Korean or the European context.
Well, I've only spent a weekend in Korea, but I'm equally baffled, so that's not just you. Han Se-song is the forest and land use lead for Solutions for Our Climate. Han Se, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Justin Catanoso. He is an environmental journalist and a professor of journalism at Wake Forest University. Justin, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
So let's take a step back and explain to our listeners what these wood pellets are. Kind of give us a range of the biomass that we've heard. That's a very kind of gentle, generous term, biomass. It sounds great. It sounds like you're burning, you know, your compost pile in the back. But on the other end of the spectrum, it can be quite nefarious.
So, I mean, you're right. There is a range of bioenergy. Like, we grow a lot of corn to go into gasoline. Soy gets turned into bioenergy. There are lots of crops that are grown to be turned into bioenergy. But woody biomass is what we're talking about. And, you know, folks may know it from their backyard grills, from wood stoves that they might have as a secondary heat source in a cabin or a small house. At that sort of consumer scale, it's not that bad. This wood generally comes from wood waste, stuff that lumber yards are discarding, and treetops and limbs and things like that. That's what goes into sort of small scale consumer wood pellets that you would buy in 50-pound bags at a Home Depot or a Lowe's or something like that. But what we're talking about over the last 10 to 12 years was the rise of industrial scale wood burning for energy. And it's replacing coal. And so in the state of North Carolina, where Enviva has 4 plants, they're not putting wood pellets in the 50-pound bags. They're putting it onto freighter ships. They've got a designated port in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they ship 2.6 million metric tons of wood pellets just from North Carolina to the European Union and the United Kingdom to be burned instead of coal in formerly coal-fired power plants. So that's what we're talking about. And this is coming largely from native forests. It's coming some from residue, but mostly from whole trees that are being harvested on private property throughout eastern North Carolina, southern Virginia, and the Deep South.
Are there examples of sound wood pellet manufacturing that's not using virgin forest as its feedstock, Justin?
So it's a fair question. And Enviva on their website actually says and defines, and I write about this in my story where I feature the whistleblower, they say there's good biomass and there's bad biomass. Good biomass is residue. It's lumber waste. It's treetops and limbs. It's the stuff that's sitting on the forest floor. It's not whole trees. It's not hardwoods. And bad biomass contributes to deforestation, harms biodiverse habitats, things like that.
Justin Catanoso, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by George Benson, BTS, and Blackpink. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.